Hello everyone, welcome back to this Pharmacology Difficult podcast. We have finished with pharmacokinetics as far as the pharmacology crash course is concerned that the series season 6 is all about. It is a quick revision of all the highlighted points of all the chapters. And now we are going to start today with pharmacodynamics. Without any delay, let's get started. Now, I told you that pharmacodynamics is a study dealing with the effect of the drugs on the body. Okay, just mark my words. So, what all is included in pharmacodynamics? The actions of the drugs and the mechanism of the drugs. Now, they can be physical mechanisms, and examples is of osmotic diuretics. They can be chemical actions, examples antacids. They can be competitive inhibition of enzymes, non-competitive inhibition of the enzymes via the receptors. So, receptors are very important in pharmacodynamics. Let's quickly jump to the topic enzyme inhibition. Now, enzymes can be inhibited competitively, they can be inhibited non-competitively, or one of the terms is uncompetitively. So, three terms: competitively, non-competitively, uncompetitively. Now, competitive inhibition, let's talk about this first. First of all, the binding of the enzyme, the binding of the drug is to the enzyme and not to the enzyme substrate complex. First important point. That is, the drug is binding only to the enzyme, not to the complex of the enzyme and the substrate. Then the substrate structure and the drug structure should be very similar. That's the only cause that the drug will bind to the enzyme, because its structure is similar to the substrate structure. Now, inhibitor drug is always binding to the active site of the enzyme. Another important point. Next, when such kind of inhibition occurs, can it be overcome? Yes, it is surmountable. If you increase the dose of the substrate, then you can overcome or surmount such kind of inhibition. Now, there is a, in the calculation point of view, there is a Michaelis-Menten constant, which is denoted by capital K small m. And what is, how is it calculated? How do we get the value of capital KM? The amount of the substrate that is required to produce the half of the maximal velocity, that is the KM, that is Michaelis-Menten constant. V max, that is capital V, and then a max is written near it. What is that? The maximum reaction velocity. So just, you get to know these terms. You might get some kind of questions, MCQs related to these terms, so you should know. One is KM, that is Michaelis-Menten constant, and one is the maximum reaction velocity, which is denoted by V max. Now, suppose the binding is very strong and by any means you are not able to surmount it. Even by increasing the concentration of the substrate, you are not able to overcome it. Then what happens? It can actually be a kind of irreversible competitive inhibition. Irreversible competitive inhibition. What happens in irreversible competitive inhibition? The value of the KM, that is Michaelis-Menten constant, it rises. And the maximum reaction velocity, V max, it decreases. And what is a good example of irreversible competitive inhibition? Organophosphates. They are irreversible competitive inhibitors. I hope it's clear. Now, next, this is all about competitive inhibition of the enzymes. Now, non-competitive inhibition of the enzymes. What you should know about these? What kind of questions can come? Now, in non-competitive inhibition, the drug is binding to the enzyme also. It is binding to the enzyme substrate complex also with the equal affinity. Okay, so this should be clear. That is a difference from the competitive one. Then, there can be a similarity, or there is no like binding. It is not an obligation that the drug structure should be similar to the substrate structure. It is not a condition. It can be similar, it cannot be similar. Okay? Then The drug is binding to a different site of the enzyme, which is known as the allosteric site. Okay, another important point. Then this kind of inhibition is never overcome. It is insurmountable. And even if you increase the dose of the substrate, you cannot overcome it. So, what is happening? It is not affecting the Km. There is no effect on the Km. Michaelis-Menten constant is not affected. But the Vmax, maximum reaction velocity, is decreasing. Okay? Just take care of these points. And as you can guess also, such kind of non-competitive inhibition, generally it is irreversible. But what is the exception? Carbonic anhydrase inhibitors, they are reversible non-competitive inhibitors. Okay, that is one exception. I repeat, carbonic anhydrase inhibitors, reversible non-competitive inhibitors. Okay, so these things you need to remember about this. Coming over to the next highlights of the uncompetitive inhibition. Uncompetitive, it is binding only to the enzyme substrate complex, not to the enzyme. And the activity of the enzyme substrate complex is decreasing. So the Vmax is also decreasing. Okay. And as soon as the enzyme substrate is removed, the binding of the substrate to the enzyme increases. So that decreases the value of the Michaelis-Menten constant, that is Km, is decreased. Take care of these points. These are totally different from the last two type of inhibition that we started just now. It is a very rare type of enzyme inhibition. It's not a very commonly seen. So generally it's not happening very commonly in the regular scenario. But if it occurs, then it occurs. And you should know about it. Okay? What is the example of uncompetitive inhibition? Lithium. Okay? Then what is the example, good example of competitive inhibition? Physostigmine, neostigmine. What is the example of non-competitive inhibition? Cyanide. Okay? Cyanide. And one thing you need to remember, in competitive inhibition, the Vmax is only decreasing when it is irreversible type. Else, there is no effect on the Vmax. Just take care of this point. Okay? So just make a table of all these points and you will get to remember them very, very quickly and very, very easily. Coming over to the most important topic in pharmacodynamics, and that is receptors. Basically, how will you define the receptors? What are receptors? Receptors are nothing but they are the binding sites of the drug and they are related to the functional correlate of the drug. They are not simply the binding sites, but there is a functional correlation also. There has to be some action also after the binding. Now, so accordingly, we are getting two kind of terms related to the receptors, affinity and intrinsic activity, IA, capital IA, intrinsic activity, and another term is affinity. What is affinity? The affinity is the ability of the drug to combine with the receptors, only the binding. Affinity is only the binding. The ability of binding or combining with the receptor is affinity. And if there is no affinity, then the drug will not bind only to the receptor. So any kind of drug, any kind of action it is producing, the first requirement is affinity. Got it? Whether it's agonist, antagonist, inverse agonist, partial agonist, every drug should be able to bind to the that is receptor, and that capability or that ability is known as affinity. Coming over, if there is high affinity of a drug, then it is required in low concentration. That is the advantage of having a high affinity. Okay? Now, once the drug is bound, what happens later on? Ability to activate the receptor. The bound drug, if it is able to activate the receptor, that is known as the intrinsic activity, capital IA. And there is a value of intrinsic activity which varies from minus 1 through 0 to plus 1. Three kinds of values, minus 1, 0 and plus 1. Okay, so that you should keep in your mind. So we can divide there can be four kinds of drugs based on the intrinsic activity. The first one is agonist. You all know agonist will bind to the receptor and maximal activation will occur. So its IA is plus 1. Antagonist, it binds to the receptor but no effect. The IA is 0. And but what is happening? It is blocking the binding of the agonist to the receptor because it is occupying the receptor. So it is decreasing the action of the agonist, but itself it is having no action. So that is the quality of antagonist. Coming over to the next important type of drug based on the intrinsic activity, partial agonist. It will activate the receptor up to certain extent. So IA is between 0 and plus 1. And if there is an absence of agonist, it will produce a similar effect like an agonist, but will decrease the effect of a pure agonist. Very tricky, right? In the absence of agonist, it will produce a certain similar effect to the agonist, but it will decrease the activity of a pure agonist. So it is like two-way functioning and opposite also. So just remember this quality of partial agonist. Example, pindolol. Pindolol is doing what? It is having a partial agonistic activity at beta 1 receptors. But if the adrenaline, which is an agonist, if it is present, or noradrenaline, which is also an agonist, if it is present, then what will happen? Pindolol will produce antagonistic effect, opposite side. Okay? It will decrease the heart rate. But, taken into account, what is the quality of partial agonist? In the presence of pure agonist, it will decrease the effect, but never, it will, in high doses also, it will decrease the heart rate to a very low amount. Because it's a partial agonist. It's not a complete agonist or complete antagonist, nothing like that. It's a partial agonist. It has some kind of tricky activity depending upon the presence or the absence of the agonist. So severe bradycardia will never occur with pindolol. Take it for granted, okay? Coming over to the next type of drug, inverse agonist. Now, what are inverse agonists? Why do we call them inverse agonists? They are binding to the receptor and they are producing opposite effect. Opposite means totally contradictory effect. So, what is the value of IA? Negative, minus 1. What is a good example? Beta-carboline is producing inverse agonistic effect at the benzodiazepine receptor. Examples are very important. That's why I'm telling you. Always remember the examples. Now, these are the things. Now, we have talked about the receptors. Now, I'm going to talk about the types of the antagonism. Again, 3 or 4 types of antagonism are there. Physical, chemical, physiological, or pharmacological. You should remember these also. Physical antagonists, they bind to the drug, prevent the absorption. Good example, charcoal is binding to alkaloids and preventing the absorption. Second type of chemical antagonist. They are combining with the substance and chemically the combination is occurring, like chelating agents bind with the metals. So physical and chemical are different, okay? Then we come to physiological antagonist. What is the action of physiological antagonist? It will produce an action opposite to a substance, but it will bind to a different receptor, not to the same receptor. A very classical and good example, adrenaline is a physiological antagonist of histamine. Adrenaline binds to the beta 2 receptors. It produces bronchodilation. And histamine is binding to the H1 receptors and producing bronchoconstriction. The actions are opposite, the receptors are different, but they are physiological antagonists. Always remember a classical example. Got it? Pharmacological antagonists, opposite actions are produced by binding to the same receptor. Example, beta blockers. Okay, now coming to the classification of the receptors. And after doing the classification of the receptors, we're gonna finish today's episode of this particular first part of pharmacodynamics. Now, 4 types of receptors, and what is the criteria of dividing the receptors into 4 types? The signal transduction mechanisms, that is the criteria. So first we come to G protein coupled receptors, very very important receptors, but I'm going to do in very short because I'm not taking the details of the receptors. So what do you need to know about G protein coupled receptors? In short, they are known as heptahelical receptors, serpentine receptors. And why heptahelical? Because they have 7 transmembrane spanning segments. Now the drug binds to this receptor and activates the G proteins. The G proteins, there are 3 subunits, alpha, beta and gamma. When all the subunits, alpha, beta, gamma, they are joined together along with the GDP, okay? then G protein is inactive, inactive. Okay, when GTP replaces the GDP, then alpha subunit is separated from the beta gamma subunit and then the whole thing becomes activated. So they are also known as metabotropic receptors. Metabotropic receptors. Now, once the activation occurs, that is the GTP replaces the GDP and the alpha subunit separates from the beta gamma subunit, then what is happening? Three kinds of action may occur. First, activation or inhibition of the enzyme adenylyl cyclase. Activation is occurs by the capital GS, inhibition occurs by the capital GI, and what is activated or what is inhibited? Adenylyl cyclase. So what is happening actually, the concentration of the cyclic AMP is changing and then the protein kinases, they are activated, protein kinase A, which leads to the phosphorylation of the substrates. Example is beta receptors, which increase the cyclic AMP, and another kind of example is somatostatin, which decreases the cyclic AMP. That is one type of action that is occurring. Second type of action, activation of the phospholipase C, that is PLC, capital PLC, and that is done by the capital G, small q. Then what happens, once the phospholipase C is activated, the PIP, capital PIP2, is converted into IP3 and DAG. DAG is diacyl glycerol. What is happening finally? There is increase in the intracellular calcium and the action of the receptors is occurring. Alpha receptors, vasopressin, V1 receptors. They are functioning by this mechanism. And the last kind of action, ion channels. They can be stimulated, they can be inhibited. Example is the muscarinic M2 receptors of the acetylcholine. Okay. Now, three processes, three type of processes I told you. What did you infer? Cyclic AMP, IP3, capital DAG. They are the second messengers. And calcium is acting both as a second messenger and as a third messenger also. In these three types of processes which is occurring. By the activation of the G protein coupled receptors. Then the GTPase activity of the alpha subunit occurs and then there is joining of the alpha subunit with the beta gamma subunit and then G protein is available for the action again. So this cycle goes on. Okay, that is all about the G protein coupled receptors in very, very short. Coming over to the ionotropic receptors. What happens in the ionotropic receptors? The drug is binding to the receptor. There is an ion channel and there is no G protein mediation. They are the fastest acting receptors. What are the examples? GABA A, nicotinic M, nicotinic N, that is on the ganglia and on the muscles also. Then NMDA receptors of the glutamate and the 5-HT3, serotonin 5-HT3 receptors. Okay. These are the examples of the ionotropic receptors. That is very short description. Coming over to the enzymatic receptors. There are two sites on the enzymatic receptors. Extracellular and intracellular. The drug is binding to the extracellular site. And the enzymatic activity occurs on the intracellular site. What kind of enzymatic activity? Tyrosine kinase. Now this is activated by the JAK-STAT pathway. And what are the examples? Cytokines. Prolactin. Insulin, growth hormone, they all are acting via the enzymatic receptors. Coming over to the next type of receptors, intracellular receptors. They are the slowest acting. They can be found in the cytoplasm, they can be found in the nucleus. Which are the examples of the cytoplasmic receptors? Glucocorticoids, mineralocorticoids, vitamin D. What are the examples of the nuclear receptors? Retinoic acid, estrogen, progesterone, T3, T4, and also testosterone. Okay. Finally, both are acting by the nuclear mechanisms. They are affecting the transcription of the proteins. So, all the intracellular receptors, they are considered a part of the nuclear receptor superfamily. Just remember, whether they are in the cytoplasm, whether they are in the nucleus, they are considered a part of the nuclear receptor superfamily. Diagrams, you can always refer to the textbooks. Beautiful diagrams are given. If you correlate this audio or this video with the textbooks while you are just revising, it will be the best thing that you can actually put in combination. That is the best use of these of this pharmacology crash course if you open your textbook and then do the crash course. You will do a very quick revision. That is one of the tips that I'm giving you, how to make the best utilization of the crash course that I'm giving. Okay, so that's all in today's episode. Next, we'll start with the drug dose response curve, but that will be in the next episode.